You are now entering the spoiler zone. The following podcast contains explicit plot details and pockets of profanity. You have been warned. The Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in wine and space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
And a very warm welcome to our Christmas special. This year we are watching...
Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, ho, ho, ho indeed, because I've been really looking forward to this. We are watching this year...
Are you jingling your bells?
Oh, my bells have been given a good hard jingle over this, believe me. This year we are watching The Muppets Christmas Carol.
Ah, humbug.
It's Ebenezer Scrooge.
Hello.
Drink to Mr. Scrooge, even though he is odious and stingy and badly dressed.
Humbug.
Oh, there goes Mr. Humbug. There goes Mr. Grin.
Do you think it's safe for us to be up here?
If they gave a prize for being mean, the winner would be him.
Yes, Mr. Cratchit.
If you please, Mr. Scrooge, the bookkeeping staff would like to have an extra shovel full of coal for the fire.
Our assets are frozen.
How would the bookkeepers like to be suddenly
unemployed?
The heat wave.
It's good to be heckling again.
It's good to be doing anything again.
Hey, light the lamp, not the rat. Light the lamp, not the rat.
Scrooge.
Jacob Marley.
Oh, that's scary stuff. Should we be worried about the kids in the audience?
No, it's all right. This is culture.
Thank you for making me a part of this. God bless us, everyone.
Whatever.
The Muppet Christmas Carol was a Christmas musical film directed by Brian Henson. It was adapted from the 1843 novella by Charles Dickens and stars Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge alongside all the usual Muppets. This was released in 1992 and it was the first film following the death of the original Muppets creator Jim Henson. Now, I have lots and lots and lots and lots to say about this. I'm sure you do too, actually, Dr. Exton, because you've never seen it before, have you?
Possibly.
But I think first things first, we need a drinky. It's time to splish the splash. And this time, it's a cool Yule gin. Christmas spice gin from the Batch Distillery. And the info bollock says, cool Yule gin is full of Christmas spices such as cloves, cardamom and cinnamon. Blended with sweet and zingy candied citrus fruits, with rich cranberry and citrus fruits on the nose, and luscious seasonal spices on the palate, this gin has an abundance of festive flavours. Well, it's 40%. First things first with Batch, shall we have a little swig from the bottle?
Well, first things first, it looks a bit specimen-y.
I knew you were going to say that. Neat, it looks a bit specimen-y, yes.
Ooh,
he always says that.
I do when it does. This is slightly piss yellow, so it looks like a specimen. Ones that are clear and colourless don't, so I don't say that then. It smells quite nice and raisiny.
You see, I'm terrible when it comes to smelling neat gins, because they all smell like witch hazel and astringent to me. Anyway, let's have a quick swig neat.
Very sweet. It is quite raisiny.
Ooh, now that is quite nice. Ooh, that's lovely. Yeah, very nice.
Warms your cockles.
Oh, it certainly does. Well, we've poured and mixed just with ice and tonic. Quick sniff.
Doesn't really smell of anything.
No, not a lot, but again, that's nothing new for Batch. Eyes down, dive in.
Loses all the sweetness.
Yeah.
Can still taste the raisiny flavours, though all the spicy flavours really come to the fore.
I think I might have deadened my taste buds with taking that swig. Now, that's not usual. It's still a lot sweeter and smoother than an awful lot of gins. That's nice.
It is nice, and I'm getting more spice than sweetness on this now. And a nice little zingy tingle on the tongue.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, just that little tingle. It's all very damped down. It's not a smack-you-round-the-chops Christmas gin. It's bloody nice, though. I'm going to give that a comfortable 4.
Yeah, it doesn't quite hit the spot for a 5, but it's a very easy 4.
Well, once again, cheers, Batch, and a very Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Well, festive glass in hand, it's time to descend into the under-gallery here at Podcasting House and open up one of the doors. I think tonight we're both going into the gift shop, aren't we?
Well, it's Christmas. Christmas is the time of gifts.
Sunshine, lollipops and rainbows, everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together.
Well, Dr. Exton, you've got something very special in mind this time, haven't you? What is it?
Well, I have three things that I'd quite like in my Christmas stocking this year. So, I would like a shiny DVD of Object Z, a six-part sci-fi serial from 1965 about a mysterious object heading towards the Earth.
We have spoken about this in the past.
We've done the first episode.
We've done the first series, because there's Object Z Returns as well.
Yeah, but that doesn't exist. That would be a trip to the Black Archive for that one, whereas Object Z exists in its entirety.
Well, mine is a little bit, as might be put by other people, on brand. I'd like the Blu-ray version of the recently restored Muppets Christmas Carol. It's not the first time I've asked for this, but Disney are really, really digging their heels in on this. If you want to watch it, you still, at the time of recording, have to stream it off their fucking Disney Channel, and I refuse to do it. So
get a DVD.
No, it's not out on DVD or Blu-ray. I've got a DVD.
It is.
No, it isn't.
I watched it on DVD.
You haven't watched the new 4K one.
You're right, I haven't.
Yeah, and that's the one I want. And Muppets fans around the world are screaming for this bloody thing, and Disney don't even have it on the release schedule. I thought for the 30th anniversary last year, they might have put it out on physical media, but no, they are really stubbornly refusing. The physical media releases are dribbling almost to nothing, and it's a shame. So, yeah, that's my first pick. What's your second choice?
Another six-part serial, this time from 1959, called The Voodoo Factor, and it's about a scientist battling a global pandemic that's being spread from a small tropical island, and it's caused by a legendary spider goddess. That all sounds entertainingly bonkers.
What the hell?
Well, most of the stuff we've seen from the 1950s has been fun. There are exceptions. Shadow Squad, I'm looking at you. But generally, it's all been knight-errant and quatermassy goodness.
Oh, it has. I've loved the 50s stuff that we've done. And spoilers, boys and girls, we have more to come in the new year. Well, my second choice is... it's not exactly a piece of high drama, but I would love to see a commercial release of Doctor Who Dimensions in Time. Now, this one's a bit tortured because it was comic relief or Children in Need special for the 30th anniversary in 1993. It featured all the surviving doctors at the time, but because it was being made for charity, everybody waived their fee on the proviso that it was never released commercially and never repeated. Now, with that in mind, people over the years have postulated how much it would cost to actually renegotiate all the contracts and get it released. It's an amount of money, but not an insurmountable amount of money. So, just for completeness, and because I know that they would do wonders with it, I would love to see a commercial release of that. In fact, on balance, what I would like to see is a collection box set of all the stuff in the Wilderness Years, because I think that it was a very rich, fertile period that I think would do very well from the Blu-ray treatment. Dr. Exton, your third choice?
Well, my third choice was inspired by the fact that way back in the 1980s, I remember watching an adaptation of J.B. Priestley's Dangerous Corner, and this would have been the Play of the Month adaptation from May 1983. So I did a little bit of looking, because I was thinking, rather than just that one thing, we'll have a J.B. Priestley box set. And there was another version of Dangerous Corner on the Saturday Night Theatre Strand in May 1970. Play of the Month in September 1974 did The Linden Tree. Time of the Conways was done in 1985. Play of the Month in May 1982 did I Have Been Here Before. Thursday Theatre in February 1965 did Johnson Over Jordan. And J.B. Priestley wrote an episode of Armchair Theatre called Now Let Him Go from September 1957, which still exists. So it'd be very nice to have all of those in one shiny box set. And there's tons of his stuff that was adapted in the 40s and 50s that just doesn't exist anymore. And a couple of versions of An Inspector Calls. But we've fairly recently had a shiny updated version of An Inspector Calls. So other J.B. Priestley, please.
Lovely. Well, we've done a bit of J.B. Priestley in the past, and I've trod the boards to Mr. Priestley as well. So
yes, level 7.
Really? Was level 7 that?
Level 7 was by Mordecai Rochefeldt, but it was adapted by J.B. Priestley.
Ah, right. I'm going to say. Well, my final choice, it's a radio choice, actually. Over the past 15, nearly 20 years, actually, about once a year, there's been a radio adaptation of James Bond novels by Martin Jarvis and Rosalind Ayres. The full cast, they're very faithful to the books, and they're just sublime, but they've never had a commercial release, and they are crying out to be lovingly pressed onto CD and released into the wild. Have you heard any of those?
No, but I've heard about them because you've brought them out to the gift shop before.
Yeah, these are a couple of repeats, but they are very high up on my list because they're just so sublime. I love any radio or audio that catapults you into the world, and the James Bond stuff is so lovingly made and so well made that it just pours out of the speakers like liquid silk.
And love is here to stay.
And with that, we are back in the viewing room, and it's time to welcome aboard two very special guests. Gentlemen, reveal yourselves.
Not like that, Alan.
If only you could see. Ah, I'd be talking into Simon's rather squished muff on his mic, so there we are.
Yes, it's that time again, boys and girls. We're joined by Paul Isles Rush and Alan Fogg. Welcome aboard, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good evening.
And from previous recording sessions, I know how this is going to go. It's going to be long and hard to edit and funny.
With balls with loads of holly.
But there'll be a satisifying listen afterwards.
Who's holly?
My sister.
If you're into that sort of thing, have decky balls and holly. Why not?
You said loads of holly.
Oh, okay.
Stop talking. This is all about my sister. Please, gentlemen, I'm begging you. Anyway, without further ado, before this goes down a very unfestive route, I'm going to press play on the DVD player. It's Ron VT on the Muppet Christmas Carol.
There's magic in the air this evening, magic in the air. The world is at her best, you know, when people love and care. The promise of excitement is one the night will keep. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas.
I unashamedly watch this every Christmas Eve around tea time, and I love it, and I never get bored of it, and it's a little Christmas treat. Dr. Exton is sick of my Christmas viewing habits because they're the same every year. So I'm going to hand over to you guys because I know this film inside out. Paul, I'm going to start with you. What do you think of this film?
I'm the same as you, Ken. This is a Christmas Eve tradition, but also we additionally watch it at least once during the Advent period as well. So you'll be pleased to hear that we watched it this weekend in preparation for this recording. But yeah, I just never tire of it. I know it word for word, note for note on the songs. As soon as the first tiny bit comes up on the credits where it's scribbling Kermit's face and it says Henson Productions, it makes me smile. And it is, for me, the best Christmas film ever made, and I will take no opposition to that. Thank you and good night.
Alan.
Oh dear. Paul, you might find some opposition. I will caveat by saying I'm not the world's greatest into cartoons, etc. But I must admit, it's something I think I'd seen a long time ago and, for me, understandably forgot, because I did watch it last night and it was a bit I didn't. It's just not for me personally. I can get why it might be for other people, but you know, I did like seeing some of the Muppets again. I thought that was good. I thought the singing was unbelievably crap. It almost reminded me of various what's it called? The ABBA. Here we go again. What's it called? The films.
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia. Yeah, one and two, where you know, Pierce Brosnan can bloody sing. But yeah, it's okay, but realistically, not massively for me. It was on, and I probably wouldn't bother watching it again personally for me.
I mean, just as an aside, Paul and I just sat here ready for the defibrillators, quite frankly. But
I've tried it. They're not great.
But go on, old boy. How old are you now?
Me? Oh, young age of 50.
So you're not exactly the target audience.
No, and that's why I caveat it.
Yeah. I think the difference is with me and Paul, we've seen it every year for the past 30 years, and we were relatively young when we first saw it.
Not 40 or 50 years, then?
When I was but 4 decades old, yes.
Mm.
So we've grown up with this from kids. If you're coming to it as an adult, maybe not. I'm going to pop the blister.
I don't.
I don't know what's coming. Dr. Exton.
Well, it was certainly a thing. Absolutely not the best Christmas film. That's clearly Bell Book and Candle. I did quite enjoy it. Well, I like the Muppety bits of it. I've always hated Dickens. The only story of his that I can stand is The Signalman. To my mind, there isn't a good version of A Christmas Carol because it's such a bloody awful story in the first place.
What? It is unfortunately the best thing that Dickens ever wrote.
That would be The Signalman.
Yeah, Signalman's good. You see, I'm not one of these people that lauds Dickens as this greatest Victorian writer that ever lived, because it has to be admitted.
He bloody isn't.
A lot of his stuff is bloody hard-going and not that great, actually.
He was essentially a soap opera writer, wasn't he? The Christmas Carol, a lot of his stuff was released weekly in magazines.
Oh, quite a lot of the Victorian greats were released like that. Conan Doyle hit a lot of his stuff. It was episodic.
Well, exactly. Cheap rubbish. Sorry, that was a cheap dig. I do apologise.
Yeah, but you're not wrong.
I mean, if you've ever read, which I suspect you haven't, but if you've read the Dickens Christmas books, it starts with A Christmas Carol, which I love. I still think it's a great story and well written, but the rest of them are not. The chimes, the cricket on the hearth, the other one I can't even remember the name of. They are really, really difficult stories to read, and they're not actually that engaging. So, no, I think a lot of Dickens' stuff is really hard work. Boil it down. I mean, the stories underneath, they can be polished up, you know, Oliver Twist, good example. But it needed a lot of work and Lionel Bart to get it to be a watchable film, frankly.
Yeah, and I mean, Michael Caine does a great job, but then it's Michael Caine. Of course he's going to do a great job. I did read a comment online about how his portrayal works really well because he treats the Muppets as fellow actors. And the corollary to that is that Treasure Island, which is an infinitely better film, works well because Tim Curry treats himself as a fellow Muppet.
Well, no comment needed on that.
Effort needed on that.
Yes, true.
I liked the Muppety things. The singing was like nails down a blackboard. They were all terrible songs, very badly sung.
Oh, my God.
I mean, neither of us can sing, but when you expect actors on there, you at least expect some singing. I suppose, give it some thought, it was filmed when we looked it up in 92, so they didn't have the automatic correction of voice or whatever they call it these days. But
yes, but they had professional singers and voice tutors and things that clearly went nowhere near this film.
If I was them, I'd ask for a refund, but yeah.
I mean, fair enough. Michael Caine couldn't sing. Michael Caine, I don't think, ever pretended that he could sing and was very much of the Rex Harrison, Christopher Lee, this is going to be a performance, pin back your ears and enjoy it. They didn't have the entire Electric Teeth band, which is unforgivable. There was no Janis.
Who the fuck is Janice? Oh, sorry, wrong thing.
Thank you, Roy.
Well, looking at the Oracle, The English actors David Hemmings, Ron Moody, David Warner, and the American comedian George Carlin were considered to play Ebenezer Scrooge. Henson later offered the role to Michael Caine, who replied, "I'm going to play this movie like I'm working with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I'll never wink, I'll never do anything remotely Muppety. I'm going to play Scrooge as if it's an utterly dramatic role and there are no puppets around me."
And he absolutely did. I saw, similar to what Simon said before, there was a comment online that said something along the lines of where Michael Caine says, "Oh, it's the Fozziwigs annual Rubber Chicken Factory Christmas party." And, but he said it as if that was the line that was going to win him an Oscar. You know, there was no joke about it. It was so deadpan. He delivered every line like he was Ebenezer Scrooge.
And he was marvellous.
Yes, he was.
And lots of it was very entertaining. The singing, I'm afraid, was nails down a blackboard, and because there was so much of it, and it was so badly done. But I like Rizzo Rat. He was entertaining.
Well, we come on to this, the fact that Gonzo is cast as Charles Dickens, the film's narrator, which I think works really well, having a guide through the film rather than it just being a straight performance.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a Greek chorus in there.
Mm. Or the narrator in Rocky Horror.
Yes, and Rizzo's there to give the narrator abuse, so there are parallels to be drawn.
The narrator in Rocky Horror was Charles Gray.
Oh.
Yes.
Really?
Who is one of the very few famous people who went to my old school.
Oh.
In fact, for a long time, he was the famous person up until the bassist from Blur went there. Oh, no, and Christian Bale as well. So the Muppety stuff I rather liked. So I liked the Swedish Chef, and I liked Sam the Eagle looking all arsey because he wasn't in America, and Waldorf and Stadler. And actually, three different versions of Waldorf and Stadler, wasn't it?
There was certainly the Marleys. They appeared at the party. They appeared in ghost form.
And didn't they appear right at the beginning as a sort of... No, they didn't. That's my imagination.
I suppose he appeared as a door knocker, if you want a third version of him that way. I mean, this film was not a success on its release. It did okay, but it wasn't really a major winner because it was launched that weekend in 1992 opposite Disney's Aladdin and Home Alone 2. So
what is the ultimate Christmas movie then? Because that, for me, wasn't it?
Bell, Book and Candle.
Ooh. I like Bell, Book and Candle, but it's just not this.
That,
for me,
it does have that in its favour. I will give you that.
See, I don't really watch Christmas films, which is why I'm intrigued what everybody else watches. Because ultimately, we watch DVDs in this house, which has nothing to do with Christmas, even on the run-up to Christmas. We're currently blasting through Star Trek. So
I have Bell, Book and Candle.
You're not selling it to me.
What do you know about it, apart from the title?
Well, it's probably going to be something quite geeky and weird and black and white, knowing you.
It's not black and white.
Well, that's a start. Oh. 1970s?
No.
60s?
No.
50s? Well, it won't be then, but yes. Anyway, we should take this one offline. Simon will tell me about it, and I'll go,
I have suggested it a large number of times and been knocked back a large number of times.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Rip the plaster off, Alan. It's worth it. I'm going to...
It's got Hermione Gingold in.
Got a what?
He's
Hermione
off.
Gingold.
What the feck is a Hermione Gingold?
She's an actress.
Oh, really? Okay.
What is a Hermione Gingold? Sounds like some sort of cocktail you'd like get in Tokyo Joe.
Yes, quite probably, yes.
Getting back to the Muppets, I'm going to throw my two penneth into the ring. What's For me, the songs do make it. I mean, I got this given as a, or myself and my brother, for what it's worth, got this given as a stocking filler when it came out in 1992. And we were just hooked by this thing. Now, I certainly have taken it and run with it. It's become one of my Christmas traditions, largely because of the musical side of it. Now, this has been, don't get me wrong, you are not the first to criticize it, gentlemen. But I think it's one of those things because it's so steep now. I mean, Paul, I will just say to you, one more sleep till Christmas. Look, when that fires up, it is Christmas Eve. And Kermit the Frog, this avuncular little frog, there's just nothing that Kermit can do that makes you not want to love that character. So I mean, he's being all nice and kind in the office to the other office workers, and then he picks his son up, and it's just heartwarming, this film. Now, again, I'm coming to it from the perspective of somebody that's grown up with this. Watched it every year, I watched it as a kid. So, I mean, there's stuff to me that I just can't stand. I'm not a massive fan of Home Alone. I can take it or leave it. It just doesn't... If you want a real sort of, oh, yes, now it's Christmas movie for me, something like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation or Die Hard.
Towering Inferno.
Always on at Christmas, but is it a Christmas film?
It's always on at Christmas, so yes.
Right, well, let's have a quick detour, gentlemen. You've got... Let's hear your Christmas films that aren't Christmas films. We get three each. So I'm going to toss Die Hard in there because there's debate over that. Labyrinth for me and Ghostbusters. They were always, always, always on at Christmas during the 80s. So none of them are Christmas films, but there you go.
Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure. And actually, I'll go again with the Ghostbusters. You normally see that's on somewhere and that's definitely not Christmas, but it is always played at Christmas to death.
Mm.
Yeah, you always think of it as a Christmas film, don't you?
You do indeed, yes.
For no reason. I will also go with Mary Poppins.
Oh, yes.
Which there couldn't be anything less Christmassy about it, but you've got to watch it at Christmas.
It is definitely a Christmas film, yeah.
The same as A King and Queen's Speech. You always have to watch that. I'm waiting for Simon to go. Yes, there we go.
He's off. You've revved the engine now.
I've never once in my life watched The King or Queen's Christmas Speech and... Not starting this year.
You're not about to start.
You watched the Stanley Baxter version, didn't you? Paul, what are your other two Christmas films?
Oh, talk about on the spot. So, yeah, I'd definitely go with Mary Poppins. Something Disney-fied, probably either Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast. And actually, I'm also going to go with another Disney film. It wasn't released at Christmas, but it has lots of Christmas memories for me. Frozen.
Oh, I knew you were going to say it. I knew it.
Which is not the best film ever, but it's certainly not the best Disney film ever. But it's just got lots of nice Christmas memories for me. So, hurrah.
Dr. Exton.
The Wizard of Oz.
Mm.
Dr. No. You've got to have a James Bond film at Christmas. Mm. I mean, technically, it should be Boxing Day, but there's
it's
still...
It's the Christmas season.
Yeah. And film I absolutely love that always sort of says Christmas to me, One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing.
Oh, with a cameo by Miss Marple herself. The only Miss Marple.
Yeah, Angela Lansbury's in it.
Fuck off.
June Whitfield? Geraldine McEwen? Oh, Margaret Rutherford.
I knew that was coming.
Have you heard the story of Margaret Rutherford when she was playing Miss Marple?
I have a feeling we're about to. You have the floor.
She was a massive, massive Agatha Christie fan, and her portrayal of Miss Marple is
interesting.
Not the way that she's written. It's entertaining in the way that Margaret Rutherford is always entertaining, but she was playing Margaret Rutherford and having a whale of a time doing it.
I've got the damn theme in my head now.
And in one of them, Joan Hickson played a housekeeper or something. And
what, Margaret Rutherford?
In one of the Margaret Rutherford films, yes.
I didn't know that.
And it was only quite a small part, but she'd recently played Miss Marple on stage in London and Agatha Christie had seen it. And Agatha Christie, having a somewhat wicked sense of humour on her when she needed to, timed a visit to the set on the day that Joan Hickson was filming her part. And of course, Margaret Rutherford was there and in a best frock and all this and came blustering forward. And Agatha Christie walked straight past her, ignored her, went straight up to Joan Hickson and said, I loved your performance on stage in London, my dear. I hope you'll get to play my Jane properly in a film sometime. And then swanned off. A giant fuck you to Margaret Rutherford. I think they'd had some sort of run-in in the past.
Well, I was totally unaware of this. Plucking us back by my fingernails to Muppet's Christmas Carol. Character-wise... The vast majority of the cast are Muppets. So we start out by adding in a ghost. One of my favourite quiz questions is how many ghosts are there in A Christmas Carol? And it catches a lot of people out because there are actually four. In A Muppet Christmas Carol, there are five. Jacob and Bob Marley, played by Waldorf and Statler. Now, this is one of the things that I love about this film, because it's peppered with these little comic touches. They're so light. It's just a nice different way of telling that story. And I think it works a lot better having the two of them than it actually does having just the one in the original version. Thoughts?
It's funny, but also really quite creepy. And watching it with the kids, this is the first they've seen of the ghost. And they're like, whoa. It's quite scary. And especially for people who aren't familiar with the story and also aren't familiar with ghosts. I have to say, the little boy that we watched it with this weekend said, they don't look like real ghosts when we watched it. So, but yeah, I liked it. I like the comic joke, because Scrooge is genuinely terrified by it. But at the same time, it's hilarious because they're getting tied up in these chains and stuff, you know, and they're singing that ridiculous song. It works, the Marley and Marley thing.
It hasn't sung to the Exton Fogg household, has it?
I quite like the ghost. I like Muppety stuff. Jake and Marley always makes me think of the Amy Mann song, so...
The Amy Mann song?
Mann. She sang a song called Jake and Marley's Chain. It's very good.
Culturally, this has passed me by.
Yes, well, it was post-1870, so...
You bastard.
Possibly, but I'm also not wrong.
But then we have the ghosts of past, present and future. And the one thing that's missing from pretty much, I don't know of any versions, or I can't think of any off the top of my head. There's two children in A Christmas Carol that are very rarely put in screen adaptations. It's ignorance and want. And they tend to hide under the ghost of Christmas future's cloak. Now in this, the ghost of Christmas future is mute. And I think
which
it's scary.
Worked very well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the whole unnaturally long arms thing just was a bit recent Doctor Who.
I was just going to say it's Doctor Who. My arms are too long.
But actually more entertaining than that was. So.
Of the three of them, my favourite is definitely the Ghost of Christmas Present. And I think it's quite sweet that they show him ageing throughout his little segment to the point where you're genuinely sad when he dies. Well, I am.
Most people are when Christmas is over with.
Well, yes. I'll ask the heartless ones.
My inner child was a long time ago, so yes.
Are you in there, baby Alan?
Again, I can appreciate it. I can see why families and people sit down and watch it and enjoy it, but you got to enjoy that type of cartoony, filmy. Like the Muppets, I like the short, sharp sequence in the Muppets of sketches, whereas this was quite protracted and long.
I'm not sure that's a fair criticism, to be honest, because there are set pieces like the Rubber Chicken Factory Christmas party and the Cratchit household and all the musical numbers. I mean, okay, they weren't sung well, but they're quite well produced. And to be fair, none of the Muppets could ever sing.
True. No, and they were the original voices, weren't they, for the most part.
But a little bit of a sort of amateur musical interlude during a TV episode is very different to bursting into bad song every 10 minutes.
If they were to remake it now, how would you change it?
I personally wouldn't change anything.
Okay. Yes, that's not a surprise.
I would make it longer and put more songs in.
Oh, God.
Well, if you listen to the CD album...
With auto-tune, hopefully, but yes.
The album actually has several songs that were cut out, so it could have been even longer. There's Room in Your Heart, Chairman of the Board, they were both deleted, and, well, there's Christmas Scat. Yeah. Yeah, we'll gloss over that.
Was that sung by Rizzo Rat by any chance?
But we can't let it pass without mentioning When Love Is Gone. Now, neither of... Well, you two won't have heard this, almost certainly, but that was the deleted sequence in the middle of the film when Scrooge has gone back in the past and he's having a chat with his fiancée or his... that. Oh, business continues to be poor. We can't do this. And then basically she leaves him because he's a workaholic and won't commit to her. So there was a song in there and it... Oh, good grief. I've got it on VHS. It's why I've retain my VHS copy. It's a lovely song, but the executive of Disney ordered the song be removed from the film, and then they lost the negative. So they've only recently, in the past couple of years, found it, and it's been restored and reinserted, and now we've got a 4K scan of the film that I still haven't seen, but it's got it all restored and how it originally was in the original cut.
It's available on Disney Plus.
Thank you for the advertisement, but I still will not be paying Disney any money just so I can see that film. You can release it on Blu-ray like a normal company.
I have to say, when we sat down to watch it, and this wasn't in advance of recording this, it was just because Stuart said, it's time, and he put it on, and we got to that bit of the film, and then it just skipped. And I was like, this is the original version of the film. Why are we paying for Disney Plus when we're not watching the restored version? So then we have to go back to the beginning and watch the restored version with the song in.
Oh, yeah, because it's one of the extras, isn't it?
Yes, but it is included in the Disney Plus. They show the whole thing from beginning to end. But yeah, it does involve Michael Caine singing again.
That wasn't me straying. That was just me passing comment.
That's all for me. Good night.
See, I don't think he ever pretended to be a singer or
no.
That his singing was any good. It was a performance, and I think it was quite a good performance in a sort of Rex Harrison, Christopher Lee, Pierce Brosnan style, and worked quite well. And if that was all there was, I wouldn't have too much of a problem with it. It's just there was an awful lot of singing that really wasn't very good.
Oh, that's very harsh. We're reaching the end.
Or as I prefer to think of it, accurate.
I think we're reaching the end here before Simon and Alan destroy the most beautiful Christmas film ever made. I'm going to go around the table and
Bell, Book and Candle.
And see what everyone's final thoughts are. And I'm going to start with Dr. Exton.
I can see why it appeals. It's not a film for me in exactly the same way. I mean, this is your box of delights, isn't it?
It bloody well is not. I enjoy this.
Yes, but vast tracts of people love Box of Delights, and they were the ones that were kids that watched it first time around. By any real measure, it's not a particularly good film. But you enjoy it. That's the most important thing. I don't have that emotional connection to it. I thought it wasn't anything more than okay. The singing was terrible. The Muppets were fun, but the Muppets are always fun. I would have preferred to watch an episode of The Muppet Show.
In fairness, I can completely see that point of view. I do see that a lot of people, you know, every year there'll be the what's the best Christmas film ever made. For me, it is The Muppet Christmas Carol. But a lot of that is to do with the fact that I grew up with it. People who say Elf, it's just puerile nonsense to me, but I didn't grow up with it.
And finally, I think Scrooged is a better adaptation.
Oh, no, no. I've not seen Scrooge for a long time. And I wasn't that impressed. And I like Bill Murray.
I wasn't particularly. I quite like the stapling the antlers on mice thing. And the ghost of... which is the female ghost that continually smacks him around the head? Is that the ghost of Christmas
Past,
present?
I think. I can hear a voice in my mind's eye, but it's...
I think it's Christmas Present.
But yes, in terms of it being the best Christmas film ever, it is for me, and yes... It's because it's an esoteric thing. I don't think the music is bad at all. In fact, it's some of the most heartwarming songs and musical sequences in a film. I don't get excited by musical films, but this is one where I genuinely love almost all of the songs in the film, particularly One More Sleep Till Christmas. I just think it's one that fires up. That's my Christmas groove. But I love Michael Caine in it. I adore Michael Caine in it. I think it's the best version of Christmas Carol that's ever been put on film. There are lots and lots of... There's a great one with Patrick Stewart, actually. And at the moment, Christopher Eccleston is, I think he's in the Old Vic. He's playing Scrooge at the minute on stage, which has got to be worth somebody's money. But all in
and
all...
And Blackadder, of course.
Of course, Blackadder's Christmas Carol. Yes, an excellent adaptation. But again, you inject a bit of comedy and humour into a Christmas Carol, it elevates it just that little bit. It doesn't need to be a comedy, but it just elevates it a bit. So, yeah, but bottom line, Muppet's Christmas Carol, it just hangs together very well. And for me, nothing's going to beat that as a Christmas film. But as you say, it is an esoteric thing. I completely get that. Mr. Fogg.
I think it comes down to personal taste. Again, I can fully understand Paul, you're sitting down with the kids, watching it and enjoying it in their first time, seeing their reaction. Ken, it's something that reminds you of seeing it the first time. We all have those go-to films that just make the day, brings a smile to your face. It doesn't resonate with me personally from that point of view. I've seen it. It's not on my rewatch list, but I hope you guys continue to enjoy it every year, every Christmas.
And finally, Paul.
Oh, I completely see where everyone's coming from. It probably isn't the best film ever made. It probably isn't the best Christmas film ever made. But like Ken said, for me, it really is. A little bit. That always, always, there's two bits. There's the bit where he sets fire to his head. I think, like the lamb, not the rat, like the lamb, not the rat. And also in the first bit of the song where they sing about Scrooge. And I don't even know what the context of the song is, but they go, no cheeses for us, Mises. Aww. And there's loads of little bits like that that I love. And they're very personal to me because I've watched it a million times. And the same for you, Ken. And like you say, whether you watch it again or not, that's fine. Whether you enjoyed it or not, it's one of those things. But for me, it will always be one of the greatest Christmas films. That doesn't mean that other Christmas films are not as valid. Because I'm the beacon of
that. That sounds like one of Ken's end of episode credits. Yeah.
Other Christmas films are available. Oh, Christ, no. No.
God, they are. Anyway.
Well, on that note, boys and girls, it has been, well, for 50% of us, an absolute pleasure.
And it's been enjoyable catching up with you guys and talking about it and seeing why you understand where we're from and understanding where you're from as well in terms of why you like watching it. But yeah.
And you're allowed to be wrong.
And for once, it didn't turn out into an all-out bitch fest.
Oh, give it time.
Oh, wait, what time?
Stop recording and we'll give it a go.
And cue the deleted scenes.
After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas Day.
And on that note, boys and girls, we shall sign off. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a lovely Christmas and New Year. We'll be back very, very soon with another edition. It's good night from me.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas and jingle your bells.
The Exton Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.